You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 9 June. We had Chinese inflation data out a couple of hours ago, year on year, minus 0.1%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tolari from RMB. Rand strength, can we expect it to continue? Ian Anderson from Merchant West Investments, REIT sector during May. Is it still offering value after another decent month? And then Petli Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Crypto, everyone talks Bitcoin, but are there any other coins that he considers aside from Bitcoin? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Pick and Pay risks being completely left behind in multi-billion rand pet market. Checkers and Woolworths are running rings around their competitors. Business Day, Treasury to issue requests for transmission project proposals by November. The aim is to expand the constrained transmission grid. Morning markets, the US was green on Friday, S&P 1% higher, as was NASDAQ, the 10-year is at 4.501%. The East is green, Sydney's up 0.2%, Tokyo and Hong Kong both 1.1% higher, and Tencent 0.8% up. Commodities mostly green, gold futures the exception, 3,326, Brent at 66.42, platinum 1,178, palladium 1,061. The rand is 17.77, Bitcoin 105,500, and top 40 opening call, a red open, but 70 points or little under 0.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mateta Tolari, Head FX Execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate the early morning time. We've got the rand moving stronger across most currencies. Euro, dollar. Dollar, of course, we can see the dollar index is back below 100. We're seeing weakness there. So it's a bit of dollar weakness, maybe a bit of love for South Africa as an emerging market. The question is, can our rand still go stronger from here? We're at 1770 odd. Which feels like a long time ago, although we need to remember we were 1990 or just, 2 months back. Can the currency still move stronger?
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, look, the sentiment has somewhat improved. I mean, that is really bolstering risk assets as the U.S. has really been amenable to reducing tariffs through negotiations. I mean, at this point in time, the reality is that there is little progress since the recess that was implemented, and Mr. Trump's behavior has not really been helping sentiment one. You know, if you're looking at the developing scenario and the potential rising probability is that the deadlock with some of the major economies come 9th of July, that is worrying. But at this point in time, you know, there are a few good factors in the market that is playing into the rand's hand. I mean, we are seeing strong commodity prices across gold, platinum, and silver. I mean, you just look at the silver market, it's up at 13-year highs. You know, from a local, you know, GNU call it perspective, the budget 3.0 went through without any glitches. We're expecting the votes to also go through. You know, Mr. Trump and Xi have also said they're going to meet and hopefully mend their relationship. So it seems also that China seems contained at this point in time. And we hope that the meeting with Xi happens, which may hopefully diffuse some of the tension and risks that lie there. We've seen the local bonds rallying, you know, with 10-year also on the local bonds looking really great. There's talks about, you know, the Fed cutting rates soon as well. That is also now cropping up into the market. Don't make any mistake, there's still risks in the background, the likes of Russia, Ukraine, the Middle East tension. I mean, like you say, in the middle of January, we saw the rand up at 1923, and then in April, we were close to that all-time high of 1993 around the GNU issues that really did rattle the market. At this point in time, we've retraced so much, it feels like we've forgotten what happened on Liberation Day. We've forgotten about the GNU issues, but like I said. I mean, just because Mr. Trump next week is, well, this week is going to China, and obviously he's going to have discussions, let's not think that that might happen in a positive light. You could come back, it could be negative. We could see ourselves up at 1850. But if we do see ourselves breaking this 1770 level, then definitely 1750 is on the cards if everything still holds on.
Yeah, I take your point. And of course, we've got an FOMC next Wednesday. In fact, the 18th, we'll get a rate there. We'll see if Jerome Powell does anything there. And we'll see how it plays out in China. We'll leave a demo to Tulare Head, FX Execution, RMB. Appreciate the early morning. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Ian Anderson, Head of Listed Property and Portfolio Manager at Merchant West Investments. He's also a compiler of the SA REIT Association's monthly chart book. Ian, appreciate the time. May, another good month for REITs locally. They had a stellar 2024. They continued through into 2025. And as I say, another good May.
Absolutely. You know, following on from a very strong April, it was a slow start to the year for REITs. So the first quarter, there were actually negative returns from REITs. I think people were worried about interest rates. They were worried about Donald Trump. But with the Reserve Bank starting to cut interest rates again, some strong results from companies that reported during the month, you know, the sector was up 4% following on from April's almost 7% gains. So definitely investor sentiment towards the sector has been improving in the second quarter.
We're lagging, REITs are lagging sort of general equity. But to put that in perspective, 2024, as I said in the intro, was a spectacular year for the sector. So that's not perhaps unsurprising. And certainly, I would imagine, of no real concern.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, year to date, the South African REITs are up 6.7%, which I think that's still a very good outcome. You annualize that and you're getting close to 15% for the year. And I think that's probably what most people had penciled in terms of the returns. Yeah. So you get your decent dividend yield of around 8 to 10%, and then you get a little bit of capital growth on top of that. But I do think that there is still more room here for these things to move higher. We had a really good result out of Fairvest. I think that's obviously also building on the momentum that we saw from a number of companies that reported during May. And I think as long as we continue to see property fundamentals improving, and they're improving across all property types, it's, you know, it's not just office or retail or industrial, it's across all property types here in South Africa. I think there's potential for higher distributable income growth. And on the back of that, there is the prospect for higher capital growth as well.
You make a great point there. I mean, there is certainly improving fundamentals, and they've been improving for, but that's continued into this year. The results that we've seen so far in 2025 has shown all the important numbers going the right way. LTVs are dropping, vacancies are dropping, even in office. Reversions are in many cases swinging nicely into the positive. It is good fundamentals for the sector.
Correct. And it's a function of the capital cycle. There's just been absolutely no investment into property in South Africa, particularly office property, over the last 7 or 8 years. So there's no new supply. There's, you know, small incremental demand. In office in particular, people are going back to work or they're going into the office more often. And as a result of that, we are seeing, you know, as you've already mentioned, a reduction in vacancies, and that then starts allowing landlords to drive rentals higher. So we're starting to see market rental growth. Obviously, if you've got a 10-year lease that's coming up for expiry, sure, and you signed it pre-COVID, there's going to be a negative reversion there. But there are very few of those leases left. You know, most of the leases have already been renewed. And what we're seeing now, as you've already mentioned, positive reversions. Some are as high as 7%, 8%, and 9%, but I think most of them are in the sort of 3% to 5%. But that's a heck of a lot better than the -15s and -20s that we were seeing a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we're finally getting sort of shaking out that pandemic crisis. We're 5 years past it. And I like your point. A lot of leases have now been renewed. Help me with this one. I typically look at REITs, I look at yields, I compare that to government bond yields. Does the sell-off, not sell-off, does the lower government bond yields on the 10-year actually add some further attraction to REITs?
Absolutely. I mean, it does it on two levels. The first, and I think the most important level, is it reduces borrowing costs because a lot of the longer term debt that these REITs enter into, the swaps, you know, they swap out floating rate debt for fixed rate debt, and those swaps will be priced off of the yield curve. And so the 5 and 10 year bond yields are very important when it comes to assessing the cost of capital for REITs, debt capital. But obviously it is a competing asset class for people's money. So if those yields are coming down, other investments start to look a little bit more attractive. And obviously, the one that most people would go to if they weren't going to buy our bonds, and our bonds are still attractive, even though yields are below 10%, the other asset class that they would naturally lean towards is the listed property market because of the high correlations, the fact that they tend to move in tandem as well.
We're also still seeing discount to net asset value pretty much across the sector and those nice high yield. In other words, after a spectacular 2024 and a solid 2025, we're not yet in expensive territory. I mean, we could make an argument perhaps that it's fair value. Some folks would say there's pockets of cheapness, but certainly we're not moving into expensive by any stretch.
No, and I mean, if you look at the history of the sector historically, and I don't think we'll have a repeat of this. I'm not trying to build a case to say that we're going to go to premiums to net asset value. But if you think about the sort of 2010 to 2017 period, most of the REITs traded at premiums to net asset value. And that allowed them to raise equity at premiums to the value of the underlying portfolios, buy properties, and create value and additional income through that. So I don't think we're going to ever get back to that. Who knows? I could be wrong. But we're probably not going back there. But the discounts are still far too wide, in my opinion. Companies that are showing good growth, like Fairvest, for example, they are trading at much closer to net asset value. But there are still some companies that are trading at 40 and 50% discounts to net asset value. I think of Octodec as a prime example of a business that's trading at just too great a discount to net asset value. But I agree with your comment that there is still value in the sector. And as long as the sector continues to produce, or the companies within the sector continue to produce higher growth in distributable income, that value will be unlocked. And I think we will see some of that in the second half of this year. Mm-hmm. If the Reserve Bank, you know, cuts interest rates again at least once, maybe even twice, the ECB is cutting, the Fed will probably also cut this year. And those will all be positive signals for investors investing in listed property, and specifically in the South African listed property sector.
We'll leave it there. That's Ian Anderson, Head of Listed Property Portfolio Manager, Merchant West Investments. Appreciate the time. Give your money smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Petri Redenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning time. We talk crypto from time to time on this show, although typically, in fact, almost exclusively, we talk around Bitcoin. There are, of course, thousands, tens of thousands of coins, and that's not even touching on the meme coins that are trading out there. In your investing trading world, is it Bitcoin? Are there other cryptos that you potentially look at?
Morning, Simon. So, look, no. I like Bitcoin and I like Ethereum and I like a little bit of Dogecoin for the laughs. But other than that, I don't understand the rest of them, to be honest with you. And I don't really want to get involved in things I don't understand. We see lots of stories about, what was her name, Hawk Tour Girl and the Trump coin and all these things where people pile into instruments that are freshly minted or freshly created. And there aren't really a huge amount of rules around who can make a crypto. So what there is a push for regulation in terms of who's allowed to trade them, right? Mm-hmm. So if we look at the – I mean, I think we've got some really fantastic exchanges locally. So Valour and Luno both are really top sort of shelf businesses, if you will. And if you on board as a client, you've got to be FICA'd and you've got to, you know, do all the rest of the stuff like you would with a normal bank account or you would with a normal stockbroking account. But at the end of the day, the regulation on the other end of the coin, no pun intended, is where there's a huge sort of lack, if you will. So I can create a crypto. I can put it if I get, you know, put it out there on the internet and if it gets popular enough. Platforms are listed, people can buy and sell it, but there's no way that the end user knows whether or not I am the scammer. As we're in the stockbroking world, these are legitimate companies. It's very rare that companies make it to listed status when they're actually, you know, smoke and mirrors. I mean, it has happened, obviously, in the past, but it's so rare. I mean, the last one I can really think of is Enron, right? That was a big one. But I can almost guarantee you that somebody listening out there can tell you of at least three or four rug pulls that they've been a part of in the last couple of years, right, in the crypto world. So for that reason, it's just an environment that's very, very complicated and very, very difficult to know, you know, what's real and what's not, what has value and what doesn't. And a lot of people out there, I'm sure, will listen to this and think, yeah, but, you know, if you get the right altcoin, you know, you could make it big. And yeah, sure, if you get the right one, you could make it big. But the chances of that, it's going to be easier to pick the right penny stock. I can assure you that.
Yeah.
So I think that for that reason, I stick to the big boys. I like Bitcoin. I understand Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin printed a new all-time record high. Earlier this year, I took a bit of flack. I said it's time to sell. You know, since then, it pulled back 30% into April, right? And now for the rest of the year, we've already made new highs, but we probably kind of push into December to make that four-year cycle peak. So that's something that I can understand quite easily, the four-year cycle, the halving cycle on Bitcoin. So for that reason, that I'll buy and be involved with. Everything else, not really. I mean, I'll take a bit of Ethereum too, since it's kind of the second biggest, if you will, and it's been around the second longest. But beyond that, I think the rest are just too risky.
And I take your point, absolutely. I mean, I didn't even do Ethereum. I'm just a Bitcoin, I suppose you could say, a Bitcoin maximalist or something. And you're trading these, because I bought some Bitcoin, I can't even remember when, it was sub 10,000, and I just kind of hold on. But are you kind of more trading them, or are you a hodler?
Well, I've got a very slow strategy, if you will, right? So I will trade in and out of them, but over a very long period of time. So, for example, now my plan would be to sell in December, as I think that will be the peak of the four-year cycle. And then I think in 2026, you know, the coin, or good old Bitcoin, probably pulls back somewhere between 70 and 80%. When it gets down to 70% down, and I'll buy again, and I'll wait for, you know, 3 years essentially until the four-year cycle peak. So that's a way of trading it that's much slower, but it's done fantastically well. And it's a cycle that repeats itself every 4 years, has been doing that since the beginning. So it's a relatively – so I don't know if you call that – I suppose that's swing trading, right?
Yeah.
Or position trading, if you will, not necessarily just holding on for dear life for the next 20 years. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that either. I think for a lot of people even in stocks, man, buy and hold. The money, everybody wants to trade. Everybody, I mean, I'm a stockbroker, okay? So trading is good for my business, good for my health if you're an active trader. But the truth is, the money is really made if you just buy stuff and forget about it. And okay, Bitcoin doesn't pay dividends. That's where stocks has one over it, right?
But yeah.
Earn the money over time. You buy stuff now, you look again in 20, 30 years, you go, wow, that's a lot of money, I didn't realize. And you don't have to be buying and selling stuff every day to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I take a point. And certainly that's what I said. I buy it, I hold it, I stay where we are. We leave it there. That's Petli Rodenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you trading other crypto coins, or are you just a Bitcoin? Well, maybe like Petli, a little bit of Ethereum, but certainly none of those alts. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Anthony Clark on Friday. We're talking a number of things, but one of them was the Nampak recovery, which has been spectacular and potential for more upside. And certainly Anthony is very bullish around that. We asked if you were holding this turnaround story. Three quarters of you, and I'm in that pile, said, nope, you missed it. It's been spectacular, and it was the speed at which it happened. We're seeing with, for example, Pick and Pay, that turnaround is taking a heck lot longer. The rest was split between, yes, loving it or missed it entirely. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Quantamental investing.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.